Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully and mostly optimistically. My optimism, we know what the problem is. Knowing what the problem is, we know what to do. That's the source of my optimism. So let's talk a little bit about the recently released Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. This report indicates clearly that the literally millions upon millions of data points scientists have gathered from all over the Earth in the last decades all point to an ever-worsening climate situation. We know this, but it doesn't seem that we, as a species, are responding rationally. Which is not to say we aren't making any progress toward a cleaner environment. Of course we are. Clean energy production is increasing. The public is becoming more and more aware of the damage done by fossil fuel emission and other destructive processes like our focus on polluting ways of creating our food. But the simple truth is we are not making anywhere near enough progress. To visualize what I'm talking about, imagine you're just getting into a rowboat to cross a broad river with a current. Your goal is to get to the other side of the river. Unfortunately, downstream there's a waterfall which will be catastrophic if you go over it. So as you row, making progress towards the other side, the question is, are you going to get to the other side before you get to the waterfall? Right now, metaphorically speaking, with climate catastrophe being the waterfall, we are not going to get to the other side doing business as usual, which is largely what we are doing before we go over the waterfall. So as I row across that broad river, I can say I'm making progress, but the question is the progress adequate? And in terms of what we're doing in terms of climate, the answer is no, not adequate. What would I have to see to believe that our progress was going to result in avoidance of a catastrophic climate change? I would have to see the rate of increase of greenhouse gases curving towards zero. Then we might have a fighting chance, otherwise not. So far, that hasn't happened. If you want to keep track of it yourself, simply do a search for Keeling Curve. That will take you to daily records of CO2 concentration in the atmosphere. Just for the record, we had 419 parts per million this May, the highest level of CO2 concentration in the last 2 million years. And that's after over a year of reduced economic activity due to the COVID. I don't want to be a pessimist, and I'm not going to be a pessimist, but at the same time, if we are going to be optimistic, we need to be optimistic within the framework of clear-eyed understanding of reality. And the clear understanding of reality right now is that we are not making enough progress towards a fossil-free future to avert climate catastrophe. And speaking of catastrophe, I think there's this false sense that one way or the other, in the future, things will always remain in our hands. So for instance, when we decide to clean up the environment, well then we can just clean up the environment. When we decide to stop global warming, we can stop global warming. That belief is just not true. And because it's not true, it's a destructive thing for us to hang on to. Take for instance, thawing permafrost. The thawing permafrost has twice as much carbon in it as is already in our overloaded atmosphere. And much of what is in the permafrost will be released also in the form of methane. So as the permafrost melts, as it's doing right now, it is going to release carbon dioxide and it's going to release methane. And those greenhouse gases will add to the warming of the Earth. So I had to speak of a tipping point, and this is one of those potential tipping points. The thawing permafrost and associated greenhouse gases reach a point where the additional greenhouse gases lead to warmer temperatures, which lead to additional greenhouse gases being released from the permafrost. Eventually, this closed loop of ever-increasing greenhouse gases and ever-warming climate takes on a life of its own, a life that we as human beings will be unable to stop. That's a peak of what climate catastrophe very likely could be if we don't take the action we need to do ahead of time. I'll quote from an article by Climate, Earth, and Society, a part of the Columbia Climate School, quoting, "When permafrost releases its carbon as CO2 or methane, it will accelerate warming, which will then precipitate more permafrost thaw, and so on. There will be nothing humans can do to stop it." We just have to give up on the idea that no matter what happens, we'll still be in control. We won't be. So with the perils of the future scientifically clear, why aren't governments and industry around the world paying attention? My answer is an answer that becomes clearer month by month, and that is that industry is more concerned for their own profitability, their own stock buybacks, their own executive compensation than they are about the future of the climate. And politicians, for the most part, not all, of course, but for the most part, are more interested in getting reelected than they are in taking care of us in the face of looming climate catastrophe. It wouldn't be so bad if what they were doing was based on misunderstanding or lack of knowledge or lack of science. When it's willful deceit over decades, as it was in the case of cigarettes, and as the evidence shows it is in the case of fossil fuel emissions and their role in climate change, then it's repugnant. Reminiscent of the days of aristocracy, where the nobles used the populace as their own human plantation, there for the nobles' purposes, devoid of any understanding on the part of the nobility of the serfs as fellow human beings. And thus it is when Exxon or Shell or BP or Chevron says one thing for public consumption and says another entirely different thing in secret conversations with our elected officials or in their own boardrooms, we are simply there to consume their products or to vote for politicians for re-election. And the record shows those conversations have an effect. And the content of the conversations is a little secret held between the lobbyists and the campaign donors and the government officials who, on the surface of things, represent the electorate, but in reality don't. And keep in mind that around two-thirds of the lobbyists, that is, the folks that have those secret meetings, are former members of the government agency, some government agency or other, with the implication that deals were made prior to them leaving the government. Deals that said, well, if you'll handle this thing for us, we'll give you a nice six-figure job when you get out of government. How much money are we talking about? We're talking about huge amounts of money. According to Oil Change International, a nonprofit that researches the true cost of fossil fuels, since 2006, the fossil fuel industry has spent over $2 billion lobbying government to give them regulatory and legislative favors. By contrast, all of the environmental and clean energy lobbying adds up to just 10% of that amount. They say money talks, and in this world, whoever has the most money gets to do the most talking and gets to be listened to the most. So I'm worried about overreaching here or overstating my case, but I have to wonder, are we being played for suckers? So right now we've got a situation where one senator who received 300,000 votes in West Virginia can block the climate agenda of a president who got 80 million votes. Thus, progress towards climate solutions can be blocked by 300,000 voices versus 80 million. We need more democracy, I think, and we aren't going to get it if we don't demand it. So how do we demand it? One of the ways is to join with like-minded people. You know, I'm an advocate of joining my voice with others. Just sitting at home fretting and shouting at the TV set isn't going to change anything. Okay, yeah, sure, write letters to your congressman, your senator, etc. I am all down for that, but is that enough? And the evidence I see is no, it's not enough. So I'll finish up by asking the rhetorical question, how much longer are we, the overwhelming majority in this country, the overwhelming majority that is concerned and worried about our environment, about climate change, and about the future of our children and our children's children, how long are we going to take this? How long are we going to put up with this? So that's it for today. I would love to get feedback from you. You can contact me at John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org. The CCL is for Citizens Climate Lobby, our local chapter at the website, ccltacoma.org. It's a good group of folks. You might fit in, check it out. If not them, somebody else, somebody who you can join your voice with some passion to make some difference. I'll also remind you that all of Climate Talk and Associated Climate Minutes at KTAH, along with all the other locally produced programs, are available on the internet. Just do a search for KTAH 101.9. You'll find it, look for programming, and you'll find the archive underneath that. You can listen to things over, you can listen to them on your timeline, so check it out. That's it for today. Once again, here I am reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.